Namaskar and welcome to DharmaCast. So today I'm going to talk about the role of devotion or bhakti in the spiritual path, and I'm going to begin with a reading from the work of Sri Sri Anandamurti, which is called Bhakti is the Best. It is a recognized fact that the way to salvation is threefold: jnana, knowledge, karma, action, and bhakti. All three of these roles are recognized roots, and I have nothing to say against any of them. But you know, those who are experienced in this life of spirituality say, after realization, that the path of bhakti is the best. Even the intellectual giant Shankaracharya had to admit, bhakti is the best way to moksha or salvation. The approach of bhakti is the best. Why is the approach of bhakti the best? The approach of jnana, or knowledge, is through analysis and synthesis, passing along the systoltic route of movement, and there is pause and speed. During the phase of pause, there is every chance of degeneration. And what happens in the approach of karma, or action? Wherever one gets diverted from the goal of life, from the culminating point of one's march, one becomes degenerated. Vanity may develop, both in the case of jnana and in the case of karma. But the path of bhakti, or devotion, is harmless. During the approach through jnana, one is to keep the goal a bit away from oneself and try to analyze it. In the case of karma, it is the same, although the position may be a bit closer, maintaining a bit more proximity. But in the case of bhakti, what happens? The aspirant comes in the closest proximity to his or her goal, to his or her Lord, to his or her Parama Purusha, or Supreme Consciousness. To the jnani, the goal is something impersonal. God is something impersonal, something theoretical. To the karmi, God is neither personal nor impersonal, but maintains a link between the two. So in the life of a karmi, the frustration is less than in the life of a jnani. But in the life of a bhakta, God is a personal one. His or her own father, the soul of one's own soul. So one is linked with one's goal, and this link with one's personal goal is maintained forever and never gets distorted. That is why everyone will have to admit the fact that bhakti is the best approach. The devotional approach is the best approach. It requires no intellectual strength and no karmika stamina. Human life, you know, is a measured one. Human beings come here for a very short span. If during this short span one tries to go through all the scriptures, it will take more than 1,000 years. And one is only here for approximately 100 years. So going along the path of jnana is a mere waste of existence. And karma is infinite, and the human structure is a finite one, with limited stamina and limited capacity. So the path of bhakti is not only harmless, but is the wisest one, and is the approach of the most cunning people. So my advice to you all is to move along the path of bhakti. It is the best route. In a short discourse in Bombay, recently I said in response to a question that actually so-called jnanis misuse their existence. They misuse their valuable time. And karmis also misuse those things if they keep themselves detached from the goal. So far as intelligence is concerned, the so-called intellectuals have C, great intellect. The so-called karmis have B, great intellects. And the bhaktis, who are the most intelligent people, have A, great intellects. So I hope you boys and girls try to be of A-grade intelligence and move along the harmless path of bhakti. In a previous discourse, I said that Paramatattva is just like a big mango grove. Now, three people, three aspirants, a jnani, a karmi, and a bhakta, go to that mango grove. Now, what will the jnani do, the man of knowledge? He or she will count how many leaves there are in those mango trees. While he or she is counting the leaves, the karmis will climb those trees and come in contact with the leaves, flowers, and mangoes. And what will the bhaktas do? The bhaktas will enjoy the taste of those mangoes. And in the evening, what will happen? The bhaktas will finish eating all the mangoes, and the jnanis and karmis will quarrel among themselves. There are so many scriptures, Vedas, Puranas. There are so many books, recognized and not recognized, and the jnanis will quarrel amongst themselves regarding the grammar and other aspects of the Sanskrit poems. And what will the karmis do? They won't quarrel, but they will work just like bullocks of an oil pressing machine. Have you seen bullocks working in the oil pressing machine? They move more than 100 miles a day, but there is no progress. All their movements are restricted to that room. Karmis are like that. But what will bhaktas do? Those scriptures are like the ocean. And what will the bhaktas do? They will churn the ocean. And after churning, what will they get? Butter and buttermilk. And then the bhaktas will eat up the butter. And in the evening, the jnanis and karmis will quarrel amongst themselves regarding the ownership of the buttermilk. So be intelligent. My advice to you is to be intelligent. And don't be a C-grade intellectual. And this was given as a spoken discourse on the 2nd of December, 1978 in Madras in India. So this is Sri Sri Nandamurti commenting on how one should reach the supreme goal. In yoga, the supreme goal is merger with God, with the Paramapurusha. That's the goal. So what is the best way to get there? Now, there's an approach which is called jnana. It's the approach of knowledge, the path of knowledge. So study is usually a feature of this. The study can be a bookish kind of study. And that's how it's, when we think of a man of knowledge, a person of knowledge, it's someone, they've read a lot of books. So we call that a jnani. So that's the approach. But as Ananda Mutaji has explained here, that, there's so many books. How can one read all those books in a short lifetime that humans have? So there is a limitation of, if you just pursue trying to reach the supreme being through just synthesis, analysis, just try to analyze everything, use your mind to try to understand the infinite. So this is a defect. And another defect, which is mentioned also here, is that when someone has read a lot and studied a lot, then they got some degrees, PhD, MA, BA, all this, the ego develops, vanity develops. So vanity and ego is actually one of the biggest problems on the spiritual path, because basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to merge with something greater than ourselves. And to do that, we have to give up our attachment to this little self, this small self. Like you say, I'm such and such person, and I have a degree, and I have this job, and I have this status, and I have this nationality, and I have this, and I have that, and we have so many things. But all of those things are really just impediments, because we have to give up all of that if we want to merge in something greater than ourselves. So while while jnana or knowledge, it's useful in the beginning, because if you don't have an idea of let's say, of spirituality, of the path, you don't know what you're doing, and then if you read a few books and it awakens you, that's a good thing. But if you remain in those books, and you get some more books, and you pile up some more, and then you say, you know, I even need a degree in this spirituality. I'll get a PhD in spirituality. That extra, you'll get what's called diminishing returns. Maybe your first book really awakened you to the path, but the extra books are only going to, they're going to bring less and less return, and then at some point there'll even be impediments when you think, yes, I read all these books, I know everything, but you haven't emerged with that supreme consciousness. So the path of knowledge has its defects. Then there's another path that people take, is that it's the path of karma yoga, to do. I will do good works. I will serve the poor. I will help needy people. I will do whatever I can to use my body to make the world a better place, and that's a very noble path. And this path is, in a way, it's a good way to also to lose your vanity when you serve others without thinking of yourself. So it's very helpful to do service. Social work and service is very helpful on the spiritual path. But it can't end there, because you can't serve all of... There are many, many more needy people than you could ever serve in your whole life, and still they will still be waiting at the door. So that's not the end of the spiritual march. It's a part. Yes, when you've awakened to the spiritual path, you know what to do, you march on it, definitely you should do work, you should do karma, good action. But one thing about karma, which is also important to know, the real karma yoga is to do work and not be attached to the results of the work, and not have even the vanity of doing that work. Because what we say is that there are chains. There are chains of gold and chains of iron. So what does this mean? Is that if you're locked up and you have chains and shackles, it doesn't matter if that shackles is made out of iron or even a precious metal, you're still locked up. So this is just symbolic, of course. What it means is that whenever you do an action, you get a reaction. And those reactions you have to experience again. Action, reaction, action, reaction. And it could be you could get a good reaction or a bad reaction according to the kind of deed you did to start that karma or start that work. But if you continue to suffer or experience reactions, then you can't merge with the Supreme. It's only when all those karmas, all those sanskaras are cleared, then your mind will be free and it will merge with the Supreme Consciousness. So whether it's a chain of gold, which came from good works, you did a good work, but you have to experience the fruit of that. Or if it's a negative work, you caused pain, you will experience the pain. But the real karma yoga is actually to do such a work that there is no reaction coming. And the way to do that is to give up the vanity of doership of that action. So that's what, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was trying to explain to his disciple Arjuna. So this is the karma yoga. But it's a difficult path, because even when you think, let's say you think, yes, I am a machine, and I'm doing the work of God. You know, God is doing the work. But then you might even think, yeah, but I'm a very good machine. So that the ego has come. So even in the in karma yoga, ego can come. So, and because it's so laborious and the work is so hard, that's a problem. And thirdly, the problem is that you may do good works, but you forget that you think that you're doing them, and then you have to get more reactions. So you're stuck in that work. So the best path is the path of bhakti. Now, what is bhakti? Bhakti means love. But love for, not just any love. See, there are two kinds of attraction. We are attracted to many things, like things of the world. So a glittering diamond, you're attracted, the glitter of that diamond. So that's attraction for a finite thing. That's called asakti. But when you have attraction towards an infinite object, towards God, that love is called bhakti. So this is the path of bhakti, a path of love, the yoga of love. Now, why is that so important? The main thing is that, you know, many people say, I want samadhi. It means absorption, merge, or moksha. But if you want moksha, absorption, then you have to be mad for that thing and not think of anything else. It's like when you're in love with somebody, then you only can think of that person. But now we're not talking about a person, but we're talking about something more. It's that supreme entity. So when you become mad and you're thinking only of that one, that's when there is merger. That's when there is samadhi. That's, you know, the higher consciousness. That's when bliss comes. Because what is God? God is love. God is bliss. And when you merge with that one, then you get that bliss. But the best way to do that is you start with knowledge, do some, you know, learn what you have to do, and do good, the best works you can to serve others. And then even if you can learn the trick of doing work without thinking that you're the doer and you think God is the doer, that's really a great way. But eventually, the real fruit will come when you start to do your meditation and your spiritual practice, your chanting, and then also your silent meditation, and you begin to direct your mind to the real goal of your life. And you direct it not with the mechanical way, yes, the monk told me to meditate on this mantra, so I'm doing it. No, but when you do it with a desire, with a love, just as you're pursuing a tryst with your loved one, you're going to meet your beloved. And when you do your meditation like that, then you will have success. In fact, in one course that my guru gave to his disciples, his senior disciples, he said, when bhakti is aroused, the work is done. So when you have really aroused that desire, I must merge with my Lord, my Supreme One, the goal of my life, my beloved. When you have that desire, then that work will be done, and your meditation will be easy. Your spiritual path will be easy. And it's interesting, at the beginning of the discourse, Anandamurtiji, he said that even Shankaracharya had to admit that bhakti is the best. Because Shankaracharya was a young monk. I think he didn't live past 32 years old. And he went all around India, and he was renowned for his mind, his intelligence, and he would go to a village after village, and he would ask, okay, who is the leading scholar? And then he would engage in a debate with them. He would defeat everybody. So he was the master of his mind and of erudition, of spiritual scripture and everything. But even he, at the end of his life, said, yeah, that knowledge is good, but the best way to actually realize the Supreme Consciousness is through bhakti. And so does bhakti. There's a formula, actually, which my guru gave, that how to get bhakti. He said, karma minus gyan, or action minus knowledge, equals devotion. So, see, let's say you have a lot of knowledge. You read all the books around. You know, you went to every lecture, and you know, you piled up your credentials. You got a PhD in spirituality, whatever. You got two PhDs, but you did very little work. Not, you didn't lift up your finger to help anybody. So there's no. What's the, let's say you have 10 of gyan. You got 1 point for your action, because you didn't do much. So you have minus 9 is your is your bhakti. Now we take another approach. Very simple person, not even literate. He went to a lecture, but he heard something, he learned something. And then he got 1 point for his knowledge. Then he went out, but he learned something in that lecture. He did his best to serve others like that. He got 9 points. So nine, his action minus one equals eight. He got 8 points bhakti. So bhakti is developed when you have some knowledge, but you do some good work, and then there will be bhakti. And then when you have this fervor, devotional fervor, then nothing can stop you. That's why there was the Swami Yogananda once said, he said, this can wait, that can wait, but my search for God cannot wait. So that's not an artificial feeling. That's something that's within him, within, and it could be within us when we have this madness for the Supreme. That's called bhakti. So bhakti is the best approach, and we should all try to become bhaktas or devotees. So that's all I want to say for today, and we'll be coming back with more episodes of DharmaCast. And if you have any questions or you want certain topics addressed, then just send us an email at info@dharmacast.com. That's DHARMACAST, DharmaCast.com. So thank you all for listening, and I hope that you will join us again. Namaskar.